The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the host and the guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh, yeah. Welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. All right, I'm going to start off with some science news. Guys, I might be saving your life right here. Listen to this. This is from the British Journal of Sports Medicine. This was published online. This was a study done. They found this, they actually, I guess, is an amalgamation of studies. What this is 14 suitable studies involving 232,149 people whose health had been tracked for between 5.5 and 35 years. Now, during this time, 25,951 of the study participants died. That's spooky. But when the study data was pulled together, any amount of running was associated with a 27% lower risk of death from all causes for both sexes compared with no running. That is amazing. That's amazing. So even if you do a little running, even small doses, for example, once weekly or less, lasting less than 50 minutes each time, and at a speed below 6 miles, 50 minutes. I don't associate that as being a small amount of running, but but nevertheless, running once weekly or less, lasting less than 50 minutes each time and at a speed below 6 miles per hour, still seemed to be associated with significant health longevity benefits. So running 25 minutes less than the recommended weekly duration of vigorous physical activity could reduce the risk of death. Here's some specific numbers. It was associated with a 30% lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease and a 23% lower risk of death from cancer. And Epstein didn't kill himself. Just felt like that would fit in there. But this study is actually real. So this 30% lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease, 23% with just a little bit of running, I think that is fantastic. They've also figured out the specific neurons that map memories in the human brain. This is incredible. So they might start being able to actually work on Alzheimer's disease now, finally. I mean, I know they say they've been doing it, but this to me actually sounds like some solid progress. So I think that's fantastic. They're also going to be able to, the study, this doesn't say this, but I am extrapolating out of this. They're also going to be able to figure out pretty much what you're thinking in my point of view. Because if they're able to map these neurons, they're able to know what you're recalling. And that's kind of spooky, huh? That's crazy. So, there you go. Your science news for the week. Now, I made a little joke there. I said Epstein didn't kill himself. That's sort of a meme where you're like quoting some statistics or something, and then at the end of something that's non-related, you say, and Epstein didn't kill himself. Well, I actually am going to talk a little bit about Epstein today as we move on to the news for the week. This is an important break here that's happening. To me, I think it's fantastic that they're even still talking about this guy. Because once he was suicided, I figured they would just move on immediately. And they pretty much have. I mean, look, these aren't big stories. They're not taking over the news like the impeachment hearings are right now. But this is something that is in AP News. And I want to detail a little bit of the history of this story first. So after Epstein died, this happened on August 13th, this story here. The warden at the federal jail where Jeffrey Epstein took his own life over the weekend was removed Tuesday, and two guards who were supposed to be watching the financier were placed on leave while federal authorities investigate the death. Now, this was from a while back. Now, remember, Epstein was taken off of suicide watch, and he was supposed to have been checked by a guard every 30 minutes. But investigators learned those checks weren't done for several hours before he was found. And according to a person familiar with the case who was not authorized to discuss it and spoke on the condition of anonymity, reported this information. Now, guards on the unit are now suspected of falsifying log entries to show they were making the checks, according to another person familiar with a probe. Surveillance video reviewed after the death showed guards never made some of the checks noted in the log. So that's interesting. Okay, so you got a couple of people suspended out of that. Okay. Now, here's a follow-up on that story. Guards in Epstein's unit were working extreme overtime when he was found, a person familiar with the jail tells the Associated Press. So all of this is sort of related, right? Well, apparently, the feds who've been investigating this have tried to, are planning on prosecuting these guards, okay? So now this story, also from AP News, this happened today, all right? This is breaking news here on the How to Kill an Hour radio show. Federal prosecutors offered a plea deal to two correctional officers responsible for guarding Jeffrey Epstein on the night of his death. But the officers have declined the offer, people familiar with the matter told the Associated Press. Now, to me, that is significant because if you're supposed to check up on this dude, okay, and you're falsifying records, to me, that's pretty easy to prove one way or the other. So if you're getting investigated now by the feds for doing that, and they're offering you a plea deal, I mean, that means that they're going to prosecute you. So why would you risk getting put away for longer from not doing a plea deal if you actually did it, right? Take the deal. But they refused it. A little bit more in this story. The guards on Epstein's unit are suspected of failing to check on him every half hour as required and of fabricating log entries to show they had. As part of the proposed plea deal, prosecutors wanted the guards to admit they falsified prison records, according to the people familiar with the matter. They spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not permitted to publicly discuss the investigation. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan had no comment on the plea offer. Both guards were working overtime because of staffing shortages, like I reported a moment ago. They have been placed on administrative leave, like I reported. Of course, Epstein had been accused. He was 66 years old. He had been awaiting trial on charges of sexually abusing teenage girls. Yeah, he was running a sex ring on an island. And the rich and powerful visited that island. And they wanted him dead. And now he's done. Epstein was placed on suicide watch after he was found on his cell floor July 23rd with bruises on his neck. Multiple people familiar with operations at the jail said he was taken off suicide watch about a week before his death, meaning he was less closely monitored but still supposed to be checked on every 30 minutes. Epstein's death exposed mounting evidence that the chronically understaffed Metropolitan Correctional Center may have bungled its responsibility to keep him alive. Yeah, I'm sure that that's the conclusion that we all reached here, is that they bungled it. This high-profile prisoner who tried to kill himself, they just didn't have the resources to take care of him, sure. So I'm sure that they're going to use that excuse to ask for more money to run the prison. You know, they get you coming and going, don't they? They get you coming and going. Guards often work overtime day after day, and other employees are pressed into service as correctional officers. Falsification of records has been a problem throughout the federal prison system. Right. I think it's more likely that the dude was offed than it was that they just, you know, made some clerical errors here. Anyway, This is interesting to me. So they're rejecting the plea deal. It should be pretty easy to prove if they falsify the records, right? I mean, you have security cameras there. Maybe the camera that was trained on his cell mysteriously failed. But you've got other cameras in there that document people's comings and goings. So you can see easily if they falsified the records or not, I would presume. So assuming that that's correct and that this is an easy open and shut case, they falsified the records. Why would they turn down the plea deal? Well, we have a couple different possibilities here. Maybe they figure that even though they falsified the records, they're going to beat the charge. So why would they think that? Could there be somebody higher up who's going to help them out? Were they involved in some way? Were they made promises? Why would they reject the plea deal? Now, another possibility is that they are innocent and they didn't falsify the records. But if they didn't falsify the records, then that means that somebody killed them between their visits. And if they didn't falsify the records, that should be pretty easy to prove too because of the security cameras, the ones at work. Now, if they are telling the truth, man, they better watch their backs, dude, because I don't know. I mean, you know, stuff like this, it's so scary, isn't it? If they are telling the truth, and they start getting questioned, they might have some information that we haven't heard about so far that might be extremely helpful in cracking open this case. And you know that the people who did this don't want to get found. So they might be in some trouble. But on the other hand, the heat is on, right? No one believes that Epstein killed himself. Well, except for Democrats. But most people don't believe that. So is it possible that this is going to lead to bigger fish? And like I said, the heat's on. They probably don't want to off these guards right now. That would look even more suspicious than it does already. There's another possibility. Maybe they weren't checking up on him and they didn't falsify the records. So now if that's the case, who did falsify them? If the records are falsified and the guards didn't do it, then who falsified those records? See, this is it's a mystery, right? It's like a Dan Brown novel. And I do think that this is something worth looking into because the corruption on this is deep, and the consequences of not routing it out are horrific. We had Prince Andrew came out recently with a statement, and this is the most guilty looking statement I've ever seen. I would play it for you, but I'm so late with this show that I just don't have time to capture the audio, but you can find it for yourself. It's everywhere. And basically the lady who is interviewing him asks him, you were with this. So Prince Andrew, in case you don't know, was friends with Epstein even after Epstein was convicted. And there's a famous photo of Andrew, Prince Andrew, with a underage girl next to him, and he has swore that he hadn't met, right? So now that there's video and photographic evidence of him associated with Epstein, he's making the statement, and the lady says to him, you've been accused of, you know, basically, you know, raping these girls and hanging out with Epstein and all this stuff. And how do you respond to these accusations? And he comes back with, I don't recollect ever meeting that girl. Which is such an odd way to phrase it because, well, first of all, obviously that answer was pre-planned. Because you see, it was expected to be asked that question. But when he answered it, he didn't answer it straightforwardly and honestly. off the top of his head. That must have been a prepackaged answer because it didn't really address anything. He looked like Kamala Harris up there talking to Tulsi Gabbard. He just kind of said a statement saying, I don't recollect ever meeting her. But that's not what the question was. The question was, did you, you know, have all these terrible accusations against you? Did you do them? I don't even like to say them out loud because they're so terrible, these accusations. And he did not answer that question. If somebody says to you, hey, did you ever punch this person in the face? You'd say no, right? You wouldn't be like, I don't recollect ever meeting that person. Unless you've punched so many people in the face that your only response would be, well, I don't recollect that one. You know, I mean, so if Epstein, if you look at it at face value, just the question that was asked of him and the way that he answered it, he's in a way is saying it's happened so many times with so many different people. I don't remember this one. Right? I mean, you could take it that way. Now, the way that I took it was the way that I explained it. The way that I took it was he had this pre-planned answer and he just went straight ahead and gave him that answer, even though the question that he was asked was much more kind of involved than the answer that he gave. But even that is still terrible because he's not answering yes or no to those accusations. He's just saying, I don't remember. And so now, of course, he's taking all this flack. Now, later on, the interviewer asks him another question along the lines of, do you regret associating with Epstein? And then he loosens up his body language, everything loosens up. And you can see that now he's answering honestly. You know, my girlfriend really noticed his body language here. And she's right. On this answer that he gave, he said that he regrets hanging out with Epstein. And he said that what was really bad about it was that he hung out with him after the conviction, and he said he really let his side down, which is an expression that means the people that you represent, you let them down. So he was a lot more relaxed on that question and a lot looser. You know, I think anybody would tense up if they were accused of something, and I can understand that. But to simply give the answer of, I don't recollect, as opposed to saying, no, I didn't do those things, those are two worlds apart. And so I think this guy is, in my opinion, this dude is dirty. I'm glad that statement came out, though, because I'm happy that some focus is back on this, especially since the impeachment hearings have turned out to be a bust. Probably the news organizations are happy to have something else to talk about a little bit, at least, right? Now, Representative Paul Gosar came out earlier this week, and he's a congressperson who basically, he wrote something like 26 tweets or something like that. I can't remember how many letters are in the phrase, Epstein didn't kill himself. But all these tweets, the first letter, when you look at his tweets in succession, spell out that phrase, Epstein didn't kill himself. Well, in response to that, it's so funny. Somebody writes, there's a reporter for politics. His name is Kyle Cheney. He puts question mark, question mark, question mark. This is wild. As many have pointed out, the first letter in each of the top, it's 23 tweets, of Representative Gosar's account spell, Epstein didn't kill himself. The 23 tweets were about today's impeachment hearing, but that's beside the point. And then he puts... Then Gosar writes, all of the tweets pertain to today's hearing. Rest assured they are substantive. Anyway, he writes another paragraph, and Gosar's new tweet says Area 51. So, and then this Kyle Cheney guy writes an emoji in response to that, just rolling his eyes. So Gosar is just having some fun here. He appeared on Tucker Carlson, and he did say that he wanted to bring attention back to this. And if that was really his intention, and he wasn't just, you know, goofing around here, which, I mean, I wouldn't blame him. That's pretty funny to have done that. But But if he really intended to bring the focus back on this case and away from the impeachment hearings, I think that's a great thing. Disgraced Representative Katie Hill writes back to Kyle Cheney, the person who I just said was a political commentator, and commented, "This is wild," on Representative Gozer's tweet. Katie Hill writes, "No, like this actually happened. Real members of Congress tweeting out real conspiracy theories. An acrostic, no less." Wow, Katie Hill taught me two new words, actually, because this next tweet is in response to that from Representative Gozer. His name is Paul Gozer. You know, every time I say his name, I think of Gozer, the Gozerian from Ghostbusters. But anyway, he writes to her, "You're surprised by me? You single-handedly taught an entire country a new word, hashtag Thruple. And what the hell is up with that tattoo? Relax." I guess that H could stand for heck, but anyway, man, what a burn. Okay, so Katie Hill, in case you don't know, was resigned in disgrace because she had an inappropriate relationship with a staffer as well as her husband. And also, I guess there were some pictures of her naked, which I have not seen, so I think that's what he's referencing with a tattoo. And the tattoo is of an iron cross, which I actually don't know what it means, but apparently when Republicans have had the tattoo in the past, the Democrats say that they are Nazi sympathizers, and so apparently it has some sort of overtones like that. But when Katie Hill has it, nobody cares. They say, well, it has other meanings. So apparently, you know, that outrage only goes one way. Personally, I don't care either way because I don't know what that symbolism is. I'm unfortunately ignorant of it. And I've not seen the pictures of Katie Hill, although I hear they are fantastic in a bad way. So pretty funny. When did the Democrats become the hall monitors? I mean, do you remember when the liberals had all the funny people? They're not funny anymore. They're terrible. And now the conservatives are funny. It's so strange how things have flipped around in just a couple of years. I mean, I guess Trump really brought out the humor in the right. And speaking of being a buzzkill, this whole impeachment hearing is flopping, just like I said it would. I knew it was nothing, and they've got nothing. I mean, really, their star witnesses are people who have overheard other people, or people who have been told by other people that they've overheard things. I mean, it's crazy. So none of these people have not only met the president when he was on the call, they've never met him, period. What kind of witnesses are these? It's terrible. They don't want you to know who the whistleblower is, because he's a CIA agent, as I reported, you know, weeks ago. And I knew this whole thing was a giant sham. But, you know what the benefit of this may be to the Democrats. You know, it's kind of weird. Why would they go through this? I think what they're doing is a lot of the people who are running for president for the nomination on the Democrat side are in Congress. And look at who they are. You've got people like Tulsi Gabbard. You've got Bernie Sanders. Even Elizabeth Warren. These people are going to be tied up, and they're not going to be able to be out campaigning, which means that Joe Biden is more likely to get the nomination because he's going to be able to spend more time out on the campaign trail. So maybe that's the bonus and why they're going through with this, because it seems kind of weird that they're doing this so strongly. So, I mean, that's a little 4D chess, a little conspiracy-y. But, hey, look at how many conspiracies we thought were conspiracies and turned out to be real. Again, it comes out again that Google is censoring conservatives. I mean, it's not a conspiracy. It actually has been happening. So, you know, just questioning something and being curious about something doesn't make it a conspiracy. Or if you want to look at it this way, conspiracies are real. And just because you think something is a conspiracy doesn't mean that you're nuts. It means that you are a curious person and you want to know what the heck is really going on. Guys, thanks for listening.